If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now. been listening to Fat B from Keller Williams' release Sands. Keller is one of those guys we've been dying to have on the show because he is so unique in his musical approach while performing so many different types of music. He is an artist in the truest sense of the word, and we're always impressed when we see him play or hear what he has to offer the community. We were particularly intrigued by his latest effort, an album without words, and for an artist that has a lot to say, well, it's quite the feat. While some of the work on Sands is a rework of some older material, the album is very fresh and very exciting. Our conversation started, though, when I asked Keller about his insistence of naming his records with just one word.
That's right. That's exactly right. And to some, it's not a big deal. But if you really get inside each one syllable word, you can pull a lot out of one syllable word. Each compilation was named with that one syllable word for a reason, because that the idea is less is more, and it's really fun to make up things in podcasts.
Sands is no different. What is different on this record is that there is material that you've played before, that you've reimagined and added pieces to put together. You could have easily called this record dance or jazz, something other than Sands, because it really is a great record to put on and dance around a bit with.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. And feel free to look up my record called Dance. Really good. It's real dance record. This one is all kinds of instrumental songs that I've been playing for the past 20 years. Some of them just kind of vanished. And I'm a huge fan of instrumental music. I've never felt that my chops are sufficient for, you know, playing really nice melodies, and instrumental music often focuses on the melody. And but these songs are a little more rhythmic based, with like hints of melody throughout. And you know, I've really been into electronic dance music for the past 15 years. Obviously, it's it shows up in my solo looping shows, where I'm kind of vaguely walking the line of electronic dance music with some of the loops I create. But this one is all, you know, acoustic guitar, upright bass, and then we utilize the kind of the what's happening today in the DJ world with the electronic kind of samples. But yet some of these samples are natural drums, but kind of produced and put together in more of an EDM sort of way. And I'm really, really happy with this record. And you know, when CDs came out, you know, it was, my idea was, why not put as much material that this medium will hold? And so in the, you know, the 90s, you'll see like this 70 minute CDs take it right up to the end, you know. And now that it's kind of turned into like, you know, a single world, to where people pluck out the singles they want. And also, which is the really cool thing, is, you know, vinyl's obviously making a little bit of a comeback in somewhat of a subculture sort of cultish way. And so I am focusing on the 22 minutes per side, which means less music, but I feel like the quality is getting better, because more time is being spent on to less songs rather than focusing on filling the medium with as much material as we can. So I think it's this beautiful, incredible time right now to be a music lover.
I'm curious about, you know, you mentioned live drums and you mentioned acoustic upright bass and obviously acoustic guitar. I'm curious about
the production of these songs, because we see you on stage in a solo setting and you have the drum loops going, and then you add a bass line or you add some other sound to the landscape. And I'm curious about the time it takes you to actually produce a studio record, because I would imagine within the confines of a studio, you have the ability to play with so many more toys and probably interject more, and for lack of a better word, real instruments like the drums, as an example. So do these songs take longer to produce and longer to think through because you have access to so many more gizmos in the studio?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many ways that you could right the wrongs and make things what you think is as close to perfect as possible. And so there's no real label time restraints for me, you know, that I don't really play the mainstream game so far underneath the radar of the mainstream. It seems like I don't need to really worry about, producing something that's going to be played on the radio, you know, and I'm grateful that there's some stations that play my music, but I'm not like looking to create music that's popular on the radio. But yeah, when I recorded, it used to be like I really wanted to take, 10 days straight and just focus on a project and, kind of have a schedule to where, everyone plays live at the same time, and then, you keep the drums, and the drums were playing with the band, and then you can go back and overdub everything else. And now that I'm usually home 3.5 days a week, gone 3.5 days a week, 110 shows a year or so, just all on the weekends. So I'm looking at like Tuesdays and Wednesdays from like 11 to 3. And then I leave to go pick up my kids. And so we may work on a song for like 4 sessions, Tuesday, Wednesday, next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. And then it's like, it's done and it's ready for mixing, which will probably come way later. And so when you approach it like that, when there's no rush and you really focus on a song and you don't want to overuse instruments, it's really, you have a lot of time to play around with it. So that's kind of how Sans was made, was, starting with my guitar and playing the pieces like I've always played them for, over the years. And then that's when the real fun began, is when you go in and you create these drum lines and bass parts to a song that's been played for so long, but never have seen those parts. And there was definitely a lot of trial and error, I think that's just the best thing, the best way. If you rush through something, then it's always going to be something that you wish you did differently. And this way you can sit and listen to a recording, and then a month later you can change the little parts to kind of make you feel better about it. And we did that for all the songs, really.
Are these songs, do you play all of the parts on these songs as you would in a solo setting, or is this a matter of people from the Keels or other people that you play with sitting down and doing some of the parts, or is this you in your laboratory doing a lot of this on your own?
No, I am, I love the bass, but the upright bass is a completely different monster than the electric bass. And I feel there might not be a lot of folks better in the world right now than Danton Bowler, DantonBoller. And he was on my Sync record, which is spelled SYNC. And he traveled the world with a lot of jazz folks, and as well as the Jazz Mandolin Project. And he plays a lot with Bridget Everett, very famous comedian, singer, as well as Taylor Mack. Taylor Mack is an amazing performer as well. And so Danton makes his rounds, lives up in Harlem, and he a lot of times just works around New York City. And I was just blown away at his performance on this record. And he really takes it to another level. And I think there's even like maybe on track three where he has one bow part, you know, with the bow and the right side, and then a plucked part on the left side. So I guess it's not normal to have a, you know, two bass lines.
Yeah, yeah.
And he pulls it off like a, you know, like a trained symphony player.
It's amazing. I mean, there are so many highs on this record. You know, right out of the gate with Fat B, I mean, you get right into the groove, and I guess that's Danton, right? I mean, that's the probably the grooviest number on the record, just in terms of that bass line. I just love it all.
Thank you very much.
So you're in the laboratory, Danton comes in, and you play together. Because there's so many sounds, I'm curious about the process in terms of, you have the original acoustic material in your head, you've played it for a number of years, so you put that down first, and then you add the elements, or do you work backwards? I'm just curious about how it all comes together.
No problem. Well, when you're starting from scratch, the main important thing is tempo and to lock into that tempo. So there's a click track that I play along to make sure that I'm on the one and locked in. Once that guitar is played to that graph, and then I can line up drum beats. You know, but different. There's stuff that we actually played, like the samples, like on the keyboard, but they were triggering like real drum sounds, and then we can line up like these pre-recorded drum loops. There's so many programs that you can buy that's like full-on legal. Pre-recorded drum loops done with all kinds of drums, all kinds of players, all kinds of DJs, and you can edit. You can edit these to make them your own as well. You can lay a few theirs on top, and then what I did with this thing is that I played the bass part on my electric bass, or a bass part, not necessarily the bass part, and sent it to Danton by way of Dropbox, and then Danton takes the tracks to his laboratory and takes his time with it, and he went through, you know, three different basses and three different bows, and he was experimenting. It was no rush, you know, and then I would give him notes and maybe change this part, and you know, that's how it did. He didn't come down to Virginia. I was just sending right up there, and he, you know, went into his studio and did his thing in his own space. And the comfort level, I think, was pretty high in that department. And then once we get it back, you know, we can edit and add and take away things and really take our time with it. And then after that, like this, you know, there could be some little live percussion parts that we played, like the Spanish hand clapping kind of sounds, or like the triangles and the shakers and the cowbells and the bongos with stick. This bongos with sticks and the go-go number called Rochambeau.
Rochambeau, a go-go.
Rochambeau, a go-go. Thank you so much. That is exactly the name. it started out as Rochambeau, and it and the first version recorded was with the String Cheese Incident on the record Breathe.
Right.
And then it kind of morphed that into like a trouble funk type of go-go groove that I love so much.
These songs, you're obviously going to take them on the road. Is when you do this stuff, when you do any material, but particularly this material live, does it take a lot of planning for you to plan out the loops and to plan out what goes where and the sequence of events? I know that you, I mean, we've watched you for years build, you know, the sonic landscape live. How much planning goes into that? Because, you know, it doesn't look like to the person who's just watching you play, it looks pretty seamless and easy. But I would imagine even that takes a fair bit of planning to know where you're going to put all of these things and how, again, you're going to be able to build these songs out.
Well, as far as the me looping, it's something I've been doing for so long, and I've been using a lot of the same gear for the past several years. And once you spend, you know, hours upon hours with this gear, it becomes second nature. And like, for instance, like the Dance record, which was a kind of a DJ remix of all of my favorite samples from my record called Laugh. And it's about 10, 11 years ago. And that's one of my favorite records, but it could never really be recreated. Now, granted, it could if you really went in and studied all the parts and figured out how you're going to do it, just like Sands. It was never, the idea was never to really take it out and try and recreate these songs live. This is a very, like Dance, a very, very self-indulgent record, in a sense that I'm trying to release music that I actually listen to. It's strange to think that I go out and play music that is not what I listen to. So again, these samples on this Sands record, they can all be loaded up onto some kind of device, and I could probably hit a button and those samples would probably create, probably be there. Or I can hire musicians to recreate them. But again, that was never really the idea. And my live shows are, you know, my day job is what I call my day job, is my solo show. And, you know, there's plenty of songs to choose from. And I would probably, you know, I would probably touch on some of this material of solo acoustic like I always have. And there is a weekend coming up as a duo with Danton Bowler and myself, and the two of us bass and guitar will definitely touch on some of this material. And our right hands are surprisingly rhythmic in the sense that we can kind of create a backbeat between the two of us and have it kind of groove like the record. But as far as like the same samples and stuff, you know, that's something I always wanted to avoid, in the sense of, you know, I started looping just so I could have more avenues to go down musically without really being able to afford other humans. And I never wanted to like step on a sequencer or something and have, you know, things already play and then you play along with it. I wanted to always kind of approach it in an organic way, not have any kind of safety net, and create loops on the fly. And that's just always been exciting for me. And, but instead of trying to recreate this record, what I'm going to do is have listening parties as kind of like a VIP type of thing at some select venues, to where everyone will meet, you know, before the show, in front of the speakers, you know, we'll have drinks, take pictures, and we'll all dance to the record for 42 minutes. and I never really did that with any other of the records. And that's, you know, that's a way to let this record play without, you know, recreating it with samplers and sequencers.
Right. I mean, you could also play it before a show or after a show when people are coming in or out of a venue or whatever. I mean, there's ample opportunity to get this music out of people. Well, people should all either buy it or listen to it online. But if they're not going to do that, you should definitely be playing it in venue when you play a show.
You know, that's interesting because I personally have never wanted to play my own music at my shows, as far as like walk in and set break and walk out music. But I do definitely take advantage of those times, by playing music that I love and think is appropriate for this crowd. My sound engineer, Louis Gossain, plays all my suggestions, at walk in, set break and walk out. I would think it might be a little weird to, especially like the vocal stuff. If you're at a string cheese incident show, and then you're waiting for the band and they're playing string cheese incident before, it just seems a little too much to me. But I think the idea is good, and some will even say, you know, just give away the whole thing, pass it out. And that's a great way to get people to listen to it too, because again, this record is very self-indulgent, and I've never really recorded a record, to sell it. I mean, I sell everything, but I'm not doing it because, you know, I want to make money. I'm doing it because I want this music documented in the finest, most pristine way possible. And maybe can live a little bit longer than I do. That's kind of the idea.
You are going on the road. You're almost always on the road, in fact. So people will hear songs from Sans, but they'll be Sans in many ways. They'll be more like the original Sans. Anyway, we can go on for...
Sans Sans.
There you go. And a title for another record, an acoustic record.
It's too many syllables. It's too many syllables. Sorry.
Okay. My apologies. I'm just trying to help, man, where I can.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
People will be able to at least sample this record on streaming sites and be able to purchase it, obviously. And you will be continuing to play some of these songs, just not in the same way that they are on this record, the way you have for so many years, right? I mean, Ticks with Told has been out there for a while. I mean, these aren't necessarily songs that people would be unfamiliar with.
Right. And Eminem's, I think, was on my first record in 94.
Wow.
You know, with a 12-string. And, you know, that song was played all the time back in the, you know, the early 2000s. And then it just kind of went away, because I started to experiment with more, like, alternative tunings. And the instrumental songs I play are usually in an alternative tuning, like Ticks When Told is in an alternative tuning.
Right.
And it's just, but yeah, I would definitely touch on these, especially at people's requests. You know, I'm very open to requests, either, you know, Instagram, Facebook. And, you know, if you write something on a piece of paper that's legible and put it on the stage, you know, that's a very polite way to ask for something that could possibly get played, as opposed to shouting it out while I'm playing a different song.
Right, you have enough going on. Really,
yeah, that's a deterrent. But writing it on a piece of paper and putting it on stage is positive.
Thanks so much for taking the time, man. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate not just this record, but the breadth of music that you put out and all the different styles of music that you put out. I mean, it really is, I mean, the encyclopedic mind you have for all of these different styles and being able to compose music both lyrically and musically is just outstanding. And so we're always impressed when we see you live and when you put out a new record, because it's, I mean, you're so passionate. You have to be passionate about it to have such a crazy breadth of knowledge and capability to do all this. So we appreciate it, is what I'm trying to say. We certainly do.
Well, I really thank you for those kind words and for bringing me onto your podcast and allowing me into your world. And yeah, I am extremely passionate about all kinds of music. And it's something that, you know, runs through me daily and consumes my thoughts a lot. And it's, and the fact that I'm allowed to do what I do. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it without folks like you and folks that come to the shows. You know, I often feel like I'm really getting away with something. Uh-huh. And that's a special kind of feeling. And you know, with all the different kinds of music, it's nothing but attention deficit disorder working for me. it works for me. Yeah. I'm allowed to utilize this disorder in a positive way.
Well, thank you for doing so, and continued success. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Keller is a mad genius. Seriously, he pulls off these records and live performances without hesitation, and we are so thankful for it. More than that, Keller is eager to explain how his art works without necessarily giving up any trade secrets. We really enjoyed this chat, and we hope you did too. With a packed tour ahead and lots of great music on board, you'll want to check out kellerwilliams.net. Before we leave you, though, have a listen to another track off of Sands. Here is Ticks, When Told.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.